Now, gracious God, in these moments, may the words of my mouth, may the meditations of all of our hearts together in this place and in all places be found pleasing to you. O Lord, you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, in the 1990s, two psychologists at Harvard had a creative idea for an experiment to test how the brain processes visual information. They asked participants to watch a 60-second video clip of people passing a basketball back and forth, and their task was simple: to count the number of times that the ball was passed from person to person. What they weren't told, however, was that during this video, a woman dressed in a full-body gorilla suit would walk right in the middle of this group tossing around the basketball. She would pound her chest like a gorilla does, and then she would walk away. She was front and center, smack dab in the middle of this group in front of the camera. Surely no one would miss seeing something like that, right? Well, this experiment was conducted across the world, and viewers watched intently as they counted each time the ball exchanged hands between one person and another. And the results were the same no matter where it was shown. Half of the people who took the test completely missed seeing the person in the gorilla suit, even though they had been staring right at her. In fact, when they were told about the gorilla in the video, most of those who hadn't seen her actually protested that the experiment had to have been rigged. They argued that there's no way they could have missed something so obvious. They must have been shown two different videos. Well, this video became famous. You can actually see it in the comments today on our live stream. It has over 25 million views. The result was something that researchers coined as inattentional blindness. The failure to see something so conspicuous, something that very well may be right in front of you when you're focusing your attention on something else. One of the original researchers, Daniel Simon, says this form of invisibility depends not on the limits of the eye, but on the limits of the mind. We consciously see only a small subset of our visual world, and when our attention is focused on one thing, we fail to notice other unexpected things all around us, including things we might actually want to see. Well, I felt like I had a similar moment this week to those who finally saw the gorilla for the first time as I was reading this week's passage from Mark's gospel. I saw something that seemed so obvious. It's right there. But I've heard this story since I was a little girl growing up in Sunday school, and I had never seen it before. Here in Mark 4, Jesus and his disciples get into a boat to go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And they are out on the water when suddenly they are caught off guard by a huge storm. The disciples quickly become agitated and upset, and when they look for Jesus, they realize that he is asleep in the bottom of the boat. Mark's gospel is the only one that actually gives Jesus a pillow to sleep on as well. Well, the disciples are so angry with him. How could Jesus possibly be sleeping at a time like this? And so they say to him, "Jesus, don't you care that we are drowning?" And I don't know about you, but I can really relate to this question the disciples ask him. I mean, how many of these kinds of questions have we found ourselves asking over this past year? God, don't you care that all of these people are dying of COVID? God, don't you care that our world has come to a complete halt? God, don't you care that my family member is immune compromised? This is so overwhelming. God, don't you care about all those people who are so isolated and alone? Don't you care that I had to miss my senior year of high school or college or graduation? Don't you care that we missed a funeral for our beloved family member? Don't you care about all of the people and experiences and moments we lost over the past 15 months? But the reality is, it's not only a question we have asked ourselves during COVID, is it? Even now, we find ourselves saying, God, don't you care that the test results came back and the prognosis is terminal? Don't you care that we're struggling with infertility while other people seem to have children so effortlessly? God, don't you care that systemic racism is in the water we drink in every crack and corner and crevice of our society? Don't you care about our LGBTQ siblings who have experienced so much harm and shame from the church and from their own families? God, don't you care? And the list could go on and on. Do you feel as if we have a God who just doesn't care sometimes? If you do, you are in good company with many other followers of Jesus. But even as we ask these very real questions, we also might want to remember that we follow a God who is well acquainted with the chaos and disorder of our world, which is how the earliest readers would have interpreted this storm that the disciples encounter at sea. Debbie Thomas points out that in Genesis, God hovers over the chaos before God creates any sense of order. And Jesus' entire ministry on earth is steeped in chaos of upended hierarchies and rocked boats. But how quickly all of this nuance disappears when the sky darkens and the waves swell and the disciples are so quick to say, "Don't you care that we're drowning?" And through asking this question, I can't help but ask if they and if we have missed the gorilla that's right in front of us in the story. If they and we have completely missed out on the fact that Jesus is right there in the boat with them. Jesus doesn't teleport to this scene to all of a sudden show up and save the day. He's already there because we follow a God who chooses to be with us in the boat, even in the chaos and even in the storms. Debbie Thomas continues, in Mark's story of the storm, the obvious but wholly overlooked fact is that Jesus is just as present in the raging water as he is in the soothing calm that follows it. Despite the disciples' inability to perceive it, there is no point in the night when God is absent or even distant. In that vulnerable boat, surrounded by that swelling and terrifying water, the disciples are in the intimate company of Jesus. She says, I think I will spend the rest of my life seeking this one grace, the grace to experience God's presence in the storm, the grace to know that I am accompanied by the divine in the bleakest, most treacherous places. The grace to trust that Jesus cares even when I'm drowning. And the grace to believe in both the existence and the power of love, even when Jesus is asleep. Even when the miraculous calm hasn't yet come. Friends, we follow a God who gets in the boat with us. And whatever storm we find ourselves facing, let us not forget that we do not face it alone. But there's actually a second part of this story that I think we tend to miss too. I had never seen it. I don't know about you, but every picture I have seen depicting this story, picture it with me. There is Jesus, and there are the disciples, and they are on a boat, and they are in a bad storm, and they are surrounded by waves and darkness. Have you seen this picture before? I went with Renee to our children's classrooms, many of which I had not ever seen before. I'm still going on a tour of the church, so that was really exciting. But I found this picture that I had in mind from growing up as a little girl in Sunday school. Anybody remember anything else in this picture? Well, if you go back and look at the end of verse 36, it says this, that when the disciples and Jesus got in the boat, there were other boats that went with them. Has anybody ever seen that picture with other boats in it? I don't know about you, but I haven't. I've never heard the story or seen an illustration with other boats in the picture. And I can't help but wonder how that new picture might change our understanding of what's happening here. If we realize that the disciples weren't out there in the middle of a storm by themselves, that they were surrounded by other boats and other people who were in the midst of the storm with them. But they seem so focused on themselves and about Jesus not caring about them that it seems as if they have this inattentional blindness. Because after they leave the shore, there is no other mention of other people and other boats seemingly all around them who find themselves in this exact same situation. I mean, maybe there's someone from another boat who yells out, "Hey, another big wave is coming. Get ready for it." Maybe there's someone who calls out, "Hey, I've got some extra life jackets over here. Let me throw some over to you." Maybe there's someone who says, "We went through a big storm like this a few years ago. It will pass." And maybe together, all the people in all the boats somehow or another say to one another, "Hey, we're going to get through this. We're going to get through this together." Pastor Nadia Boltz-Weber says, "Sometimes when we get so wrapped up in how we think the story of our lives should look, the cast and the setting and the plot, we forget about the other boats. Maybe we think God's faithfulness to us has to look a certain way when the fact is that sometimes God's faithfulness looks like the fact that there is actually a better story than the way you might want things to be. And that better story is always a bigger story, and a story with a lot of boats other than just ours." Friends, whatever storms you are facing in these days, whatever situation it is in your life or in our world to which you might say, "God, don't you care that we're out here drowning?" I want to invite you to look around this room today. See these people, look them in the eyes, and know this, that this church family is a body of people who are in the boats all around you. You are not alone. And together we follow a God who gets into the boat with each of us. As I close today, I'd like to invite you to imagine a story with me that I once heard from another pastor. I'd like you to imagine that one of your children wakes up crying in the middle of the night. Some of you may not have to imagine this because it happens quite frequently. Maybe they had a bad dream. Maybe they heard a creepy sound. Maybe they saw something that scared them in the dark. But whatever the case, your child is crying out for you from their bedroom, and so you go rushing in to see what is the matter. And when you ask what's wrong, you hear about this frightening experience they've had, and you might give them a hug. You might gently rub their back, kiss their forehead, or rock them for a bit in their bed. But whatever the case is, you might whisper to them something like, "Shh, it's okay. There's nothing to be afraid of." But is that entirely true? Because as the child will learn, and as many of us have already, there are things in this world to be afraid of. There are many reasons for the things that keep us up in the middle of the night. There is so much in this world that just isn't fair, isn't right, is not okay. But what I love about this gospel passage is that it doesn't deny that the storms will come. Rather than telling the disciples some falsely reassuring words that there is nothing to be afraid of, Jesus says to them, and Jesus says to all of us, shh, it's okay. I am here with you. Peace. Be still. And all of creation, the wind and the waves and the disciples and even the other boats are in absolute awe. Friends, may we find moments each day to allow Jesus to say to us, peace, be still. And to remember that we follow a God who is always willing to ride out the storm with us. Let's not miss the gorillas in the story, friends, because we are not alone. Thanks be to God. Amen.